Are you a Hawkeye fan living in Story County? Do you feel isolated, like you're alone in a maze of red? Well, you're not the only one. And that's why we here at StoryCounty.news have launched a brand new section of our website, From the Hawkeye of the Storm, which will feature our weekly podcast, Brada's Branded Thoughts, as well as other Hawkeye-related content for all you Story County residents who bleed black and gold, or if you live in Western Iowa, Eastern Iowa, or somewhere else other than Ames and you're a Hawkeye fan, we'd love your support. All of our content is free, so again, give our Facebook page a follow, give it a like, and give our Twitter page a follow as well, @FromTheHawkeye, @FromTheHawkeye on Twitter. The more likes, the more follows, the more support we get, the more content we can continue to push out, and it's all free. It's From the Hawkeye of the Storm, hosted by StoryCounty.news, for the best Hawkeye content in the area. Week 155, Brada's Branded Thoughts. And we are back here just, now hours, inside of 72 hours. Are we inside of 48 hours? Right at about 48 hours. We're recording this podcast on Thursday evening as we await the Iowa Grand Canyon game in the first round of the NCAA tournament. And we have Alex Brada on the phone line this evening. Alex, we haven't had you on for a little while. A lot's happened since the last time we've talked on the podcast. Big Ten tournament, which we've recapped extensively. We're not going to do that again here. What is your overall feel on Iowa's where they're at right now heading into the first round?
You know, the Wieskamp injury scared me, but he looked like he was back. And, you know, I think Iowa's probably about, I feel as good about them as I think I have all year, I'd say. I think I'm not saying that I have, you know, like super confidence. Like early on in the year, I think I felt a little bit more positive of their potential. I think we have a better idea of where they're at now, but I think I feel about as good as I possibly could, from what we've seen. I think they're in a good position to do some damage. I think there's been some issues I've seen in the past few games, but I think that they're pretty much ready to go. So this is crunch time. We'll see how they do.
I don't want to rehash again what we've already discussed on here, but Kofi Coburn caused Luka Garza a lot of problems on Saturday. Are you at all concerned heading into the big dance again without Jack Nungy, which we've known was going to be an issue for weeks now? Are you concerned with Garza being able to withstand? I mean, he got a couple 7-footers coming at him Saturday, and are you concerned at all with his durability given the fact that he doesn't have a true five behind him?
I'm not concerned with his durability. I'm definitely a little bit concerned with his minutes and, you know, just his energy levels. I mean, he's being asked to do so much, and he's already at an athletic disadvantage against a lot of these guys. I think we saw that. And it's going to be tough. At least with Nungy, you had significant height and shot blocking ability. And now, you know, there's really not much you can do as far as a backup. So he's definitely going to have to carry the load. I mean, we already knew he was, but he's going to be a mule this tournament. So we'll see how he holds up. I think Fran needs to manage him, especially in this first game, you know, just protect his energy levels essentially and make sure that you're preserving him for later on. But yeah, it's definitely a concern. Losing Nungy was a big deal. There's no doubt now, especially going into the tournament. I think they've probably gotten by, but in the tournament, everything kind of comes to the surface and any flaws are going to be exposed. So we'll see how they do with that.
What were your thoughts on Josh Ogundele for the 45 seconds he played in the first half on Saturday?
Well, he's definitely somebody who can box out a guy of any size, pretty much. We haven't seen enough of him to really get any idea at all of what he can do, I don't think. But he's definitely a big body. You would think by this point that he is in better
conditioning. He's lost weight. You can tell he's lost weight.
Yeah, I mean, he should be able to play some minutes. It's unfortunate that he hasn't gotten some minutes even in you know, garbage time in some games. I wish I'd seen more of him going in, because they might have to actually use him. If they get, you have to go up against a couple guys who are, you know, big, strong guys, and Garza gets worn out, you know, it's hard to figure out who to put in there, you know, to box out big bodies. So he's definitely probably the biggest body on this team aside from Garza. So, I don't know. They might actually have to use him.
And I said that after Jack's injury. I said, I mean, look, you want to play small ball. It ain't going to work when you go up against Hunter Dickinson. It's not going to work when you go up against Kofi Coburn. I mean, let's be honest. Garza gets in foul trouble Saturday, we could have some issues. I mean, and I want to talk about the Grand Canyon matchup here in a moment. But, yeah, that's an issue. And Keegan Murray has stepped up in a big way defensively. We've seen him really progress throughout the season. As good as he was, you know, early on, he has really stepped up his game. His shot blocking ability, I think, is what's been most impressive to me. He is not just a good shot blocker. Like Jared Utoff was a good shot blocker. Adam Woodbury was a good shot blocker. Certainly Gabe Olesheny, you could call him a good shot blocker. I think Keegan Murray is an elite shot blocker. What are your thoughts on Keegan in that aspect of his defensive game?
I definitely agree with that. I mean, he's got the physical length, but he's also got the timing, and the timing is just something that you can't teach. Even at pro levels, some guys just never develop that at all, and he's definitely got that. Unfortunately, he's just not got the body yet to be able to box out bigger guys, but he has the length. So there's something to be said to that. I mean, you look at a guy like Kevin Durant, who has very little, you know, down low strength, and he's still able to guard in the NBA. Now, nowadays, the NBA is more small ball, so he's probably benefited by that. But just the length and the shot blocking ability does bother guys. Even if he can't really, you know, even if he gets back down or whatever, boxed out, he's still able to bother guys. So we're very lucky that he's on this team. I mean, if we didn't have him this year and he hadn't stepped up like he has, I'm not sure where we'd be right now mentally going into the tournament. So we're definitely lucky to have him.
What has been your general thinking on how Jordan Bohannon has played in his final games as a Hawk? I think he's been really good, and his effort on the defensive end has been, I think, considerably better this year overall. Again, he's not going to be your elite defender, a guy you're gonna put on the opposing team's best player, but he's trying really hard on defense, as I think Luka is as well. Neither guy is a great defender. I said it earlier in the year, I'll say it again. This team improves defensively with the departures of Luka Garza and Jordan Bohannon. And that's weighing also the fact that Iowa's defense has actually been, if you look at the numbers, and I don't know if you've seen these analytics yourself, Alex, but you look at the numbers since early February, we're talking a month. We're talking over a month now. Iowa has been, not only have they taken a huge leap in KenPom's overall adjusted defensive efficiency, those analytics for the season. Let's remember, at one time they were like 130 in the country defensively, and that's in Big Ten season. That wasn't back in November. That's in during the Big Ten season. And within a few weeks, they had grown that to top 60. That takes a huge jump in the course of a month, because to be able to again, these metrics weigh the entire season. It doesn't weigh how you're playing at this moment. So not only have they done that, but if you look at the numbers, they've actually been a top 10 defense in the country over the past month. Now, I've always been hesitant to anoint this Iowa team or any of the teams from the past 3-4 years of Fran's as having figured things out defensively. We've seen some fool's gold in the past. And I said it about midway through February. I said, well, they hadn't really played anybody who had much of an offensive pulse. Rutgers wasn't a great offensive team. Wisconsin wasn't a great offensive team. Penn State was okay offensively. But then we saw them perform for much of the Michigan game. Of course, they didn't play great in the second half, but the first half was really, really good defensively. And that was a Michigan team that at the time had Isaiah Livers. And then moving forward, they played, I mean, they've beaten Wisconsin three times now. Granted, not an offensive juggernaut, but they've played consistently on the defensive end all three times against the Badgers. And again, the Badgers do help with a lot of missed shots. There's not a very good shooting team this year. That's why I think they're going to be ousted in round one, if you go over and look at my bracket predictions from earlier in the week. But I just think Iowa, with what they've stepped up and done defensively, and they've done it with man-to-man defense, which is a little bit surprising, I think, to most pundits, that this team could all of a sudden just start playing man-to-man defense this well. They've played some good teams. Ohio State is another one. They went up to Columbus and really played good defense against an elite offensive team in Ohio State. How has Iowa made this sort of a jump in such a short period of time?
Well, I think they've settled in mainly. They've gotten more comfortable and their communication is better. I think that the main thing with them is, and you see it a lot, it's just confusion. You see that in transition a lot, and especially in zone. It's just a lot of confusion, and it seems like they've cleaned that up. I'm not sure I'd say they've cleaned it up enough to be where I'd rank them in the top 10, but I think they definitely have improved. I think that is bound to happen to some extent, but they deserve credit for that. You also asked about Bohannon. One thing I was going to say about him that I've noticed the last few games that I think he's really needed to do, and I think he is now, is he's making, I've noticed a little bit more, he's making guys pay for crowding him on the three-point line where he's actually able to and willing to drive in. Yeah, and drive in, take mid-range. I mean, the guy can shoot mid-range as well as threes, from what I can tell. Most shooters can. Like, you look at somebody like Steph Curry, dude's going to shoot 50% from, or more probably, from mid-range. And he's just, you know, Bohannon's never really done that, but he can do that, and he needs to do that, because guys get, you know, you got to keep guys honest, and they realize if he's not, if he's going to be doing all this dribbling with his back to the basket, you know, just protecting the basketball and not willing to keep guys honest and drive on him, they're just going to smother him. And it, you know, that hurts his passing ability and everything else. When he's actually able to, and he's actually gone to the rim a few times and pulled up for mid-range, I think that's a big deal, just being aggressive like that. So I think he needs to do that. I think that'll be a big help in the tournament. If he's going to be on the floor, I think he needs to do that. And I'm not sure what's changed. It seems like there's been a change recently, even though he's been here for how many years. I haven't really seen this as much until recently, so hopefully it's here to stay.
Yeah, and Fran, with his commitment to the man-to-man, and I think all of us were ready to see what this man-to-man could do, because I think you would agree with this. You can't play much worse defense than they were playing, say, in the Ohio State game at home. I mean, they were up by double digits. They go into their zone, and I mean, it just gets picked apart. I mean, absolutely picked apart. So whatever I was planning on giving up in athleticism, that's okay when you compare it to the faults of the zone. I don't know how Iowa's zone can be that bad. That's a bit of a confounding subject for me, of how a Fran coach team. Now, I know Fran likes to switch up his defenses a lot. Maybe that's not a very good philosophy in hindsight. I mean, he's never been a great defensive coach anywhere he's been. But he's really committed now. He recognizes the fact that the zone's not working. So he'll still switch into the zone. And every time he does, I hold my breath. Because guys are always open for three. And correct me if I'm wrong, a zone is kind of supposed to take away driving lanes, and yet Iowa seems to allow guys to drive and kick in the zone. They consistently allow that pass to the high post, which, you know, talk to any defensive mind, once you get that ball into the high post against any zone, really, look out, because now every option offensively is on the table. And Fran's recognized that it just wasn't working. And so we have seen quite a jump. And it's been, again, consistent. It hasn't been fool's gold. We mentioned the Ohio State game. We mentioned Wisconsin three different times. Rutgers as a tournament team. Michigan, at least for one half of basketball, they were really good. And Michigan was red hot at the time. Let's transition to Grand Canyon. And that's what we're really here to preview and talk about, because you can't skip ahead to VCU or Oregon. This is a one game at a time trip for Iowa. And certainly
A loss to Grand Canyon would be both demoralizing and devastating to Luca Garza, Jordan Bohannon, the seniors. I could throw Austin Ashe, Michael Bear in the mix there, and the entire fan base. First of all, I don't want to be negative, but how devastating would a loss to the Antelopes be on Saturday, regardless of how it happens?
It would be bad. I mean, you got cheated out of last year, and you know that these 2 years are 2 years where you have a guy who's just not something you see at Iowa ever in Garza. And you know, last year was a big opportunity and it got stolen away by, you know, external circumstances, and this year is it. I mean, it's all come down to this. So yeah, I mean, it's the most, and there's the most hype going into this year that Iowa's ever had in my lifetime, easily, probably before that for a while. So, you know, it's all come down to this, and this would be, this isn't a good way to think, I don't think, if you're a player or a coach. And I'm sure Fran isn't talking like this, but it's definitely would be devastating for everyone if they got put out in the first round.
How much do you know about Grand Canyon? And, I mean, how nervous are you for this game? I have my reasons to be nervous, but let's talk about yours first.
I don't know anything about Grand Canyon. As far as Iowa goes, yes, I have some reason to be nervous. I think they're a bit reliant on their offense. I know it's going out on a limb, but you know, if their offense isn't clicking, they haven't shot the three terribly well lately. So hopefully they can get that going. I think if they can, you know, I think it'll take a couple quarters. If they get up in this game, I'll relax, but I'm going to be a bit nervous for a while, I think, and hopefully they're able to get a cushion early, because I'd like to see them, you know, I don't want to see a nerve-wracking game. I don't think that'd be good for anybody, because all the pressure is on Iowa in this game. So the other team has very little to lose.
And for our listeners out there, if you haven't caught our interview with Paul Coro, who's the radio color guy for the GCU Antelopes Grand Canyon, check it out. It was released earlier today. It's on Spotify, it's on Pocket Cast, it's on YouTube, and it's on StoryCounty.news. Check out that interview. Really insightful stuff on Grand Canyon. And I said it Saturday night as I saw Grand Canyon was on their way to winning their conference tournament, which talked to Paul about it. That was just in itself, winning the conference tournament over New Mexico State, who's had, as he called it, a stranglehold on the WAC title for years, was impressive on its own. But to be able to do it a year after the hiring of Bryce Drew, who was hired during the early stages of COVID, and to do it with some transfers, it's just been incredible what Bryce has done there. And of course, Bryce Drew is known for the shot in what, 98 or whatever year that was, with Valparaiso, with his dad as coach in the NCAA tournament. He's known for that shot. And he had some success at Valparaiso, had some success at Vanderbilt, didn't totally work out. And of course, he's replacing a Phoenix legend and Dan Marley as the head coach of Grand Canyon. But Grand Canyon, with their lineup, and this is my biggest concern, and I don't know why a person wouldn't be concerned about this. I get the argument that these guys haven't matched up with true bigs like we see in the Big Ten. But you look at, for instance, Alessandro Laver. Okay, here's a 6'10" guy who can step out, hit the three, but he's not the biggest guy on the court. Asbjørn Midtgaard is 7 foot, and so they start two true centers in this game against an Iowa team who doesn't have two true centers in their rotation. All right, now Midtgaard is not a guy who's going to step out and hit threes, but he is their leading scorer at 14 points a game, and he leads the country in field goal percentage at 71%. He also shoots free throws relatively well. Again, 7-footer. He's a big body transfer from Wichita State. How concerned are you about Garza getting in foul trouble when you have two bigs who are starters, who both are the two leading scorers for the Antelopes? How concerned are you about Garza getting in foul trouble early and Iowa not having answers for Grand Canyon size?
Well, that would definitely be the biggest concern. I think if he stays out of foul trouble, I think they'll be just fine. Even if he's, you know, even if he gets scored on, you give some points up to those guys. I think the main thing is just to keep Garza out there. So Yeah, it's definitely a concern. Hopefully a guy like Keegan Murray can hold his own, and I think he probably will. For the most part, he's good out on the perimeter and has the length to bother guys, but Garza is definitely going to have to be careful, and Fran is going to have to be careful with, if Garza, and he has been. I think we saw the last game where Garza wanted to stay out there and Fran takes him out no matter what. So that's good to see. I think Fran will be careful with him. But yeah, it's definitely a concern.
Grand Canyon's got guys on their bench who can score. Paul mentioned Freyer, who is a typical starter, Oscar Freyer, who averages 6 boards and about 6 points, 3 boards, and a couple assists per game. Javon Blackshear is a 5'11 point guard who is quick off the dribble, who's going to probably cause Jordan Bohannon some problems off the dribble, and we may have to see more of Toussaint. And Blackshear is also starting to hit the three really well, which is something that he wasn't doing earlier on in his career. And one guy that I think might be someone that we're taking for granted, and I could see, again, I'm not by no means an expert on how Bryce Drew is going to, what sort of a lineup he's throwing at Garza in Iowa, but Gabe McLaughlin, he's a 6'7" forward who averages 6'5" off the bench. He's a guy who you could probably run against Iowa. I mean, you could literally have Blackshear, who's 5'11", and then McLaughlin, Mittgard, and Laver all in the lineup at the same time, and every one of those positions could potentially be mismatches because, again, if we're talking man-to-man, which is what Iowa has been successful with over the past month, we're talking Luka matching up on Mittgard. We're talking Keegan Murray probably having to match up or Connor McCaffrey having to match up against Alessandro Laver. And then who's matching up against Gabe McLaughlin? It'd probably be Joe Wieskamp. Now, certainly some opportunities to take advantage of that of the other end, but that's not even counting the backcourt with Bohannon possibly having to pick up Blackshear. So I think lineup issues and matchups, which I said it on our bracket show earlier in the week, the NCAA tournament's all about matchups. And so the only reason I'm really concerned about this game, it's not really, obviously Grand Canyon earned the WAC title, but it's because of what I look at, when I look up and down this roster for Grand Canyon, when I compare it with what Iowa has, there are mismatches in this game that Grand Canyon, I think, clearly has an opportunity to capitalize on.
Yeah, I don't know that I'd say the Garza matchup is really a mismatch unless he gets in foul trouble. But
well, it's not a mismatch. I guess that one's not a more of no Garza Mittgard. I wouldn't say is a mismatch. I will say this: Mittgard did get all WAC defensive team, so the guy knows how to defend. He played Kofi Coburn last year when Illinois traveled down to Phoenix to play the Antelopes, so he knows. I mean, again, he played at Wichita State, really good basketball program. So no, that's not a mismatch, but the fact that you take Luka away from a guy like Alessandro Laver, and now you have a smaller Keegan Murray matching up with him, you have a smaller Wieskamp possibly matching up against a guy like McLaughlin, I think that's where the mismatches come in for me.
Yeah, definitely the four is going to be a mismatch. I mean, we've seen that already. I haven't seen this team play ever, so I'm not sure how well. I can see Keegan Murray being able to deal with guys as long as they're not super strong inside. But, Bohannon's, from what you say, sounds like will be an issue, and they're going to have to help, getting a smaller, faster guy. I mean, even guys who are 6'2", 6'3", usually are a good bit faster than Bohannon, so you get a smaller guy, and that could become an issue. I think Fran will probably have his work cut out for him. I mean, you definitely have options. And like I said, hopefully Iowa gets up early. If they do, I'd definitely like to see Toussaint play some more minutes. I think he kind of needs minutes just to get, because he's so kind of high-strung and hyper. I think he needs to settle in. He just has too much energy sometimes. And I think getting him minutes is a good thing no matter what, especially when it's not a critical time in the game. So I think that'll be nice to see if they can get him in there. you know, at the three, I'm not really sure with Wieskamp. Wieskamp's got the length and athleticism. We've seen his shot blocking ability in the past few games has been pretty impressive. He's always had that, I guess. But I don't worry too much about CJ Frederick. I mean, he's a good defender. You know, he holds down the fort pretty well. And so, yeah, I guess the main issue will probably be Bohannon and Keegan Murray, but we'll see.
I think, and I'm not too concerned about Keegan from a sense of being able to defend a bigger guy. But I will say, I think when you throw a bigger guy at a guy like Keegan, who's a young player, Keegan gets in foul trouble. Now you really have issues. And I think if there's a game in the tournament where I could see Fran deploying Josh Ogundele or Chris Murray, it would be in this game. Chris Murray, here's a guy who hasn't seen the floor, but who's to say he can't come in and provide valuable minutes defensively against a guy like Laver? Ogundele, I'm not saying he'll play. He played a little bit against Coburn, but say you throw him into the mix against a guy like Mittgaard. Mittgaard's not a guy who shoots threes. I don't think he's made a three all year. So he's not going to be able to pull Ogundele away from the basket. I think that's a possibility. Ogundele can focus on just trying to limit Mittgaard's touches in the paint. So with that being said, let's make our predictions. Obviously, this is a game that I'm more concerned about than I think you are, than a lot of people are in Hawkeye Nation, and I'm not predicting Iowa to lose. I'll just say that. And, of course, if you watched the bracket show earlier in the week, you saw that I did not predict Iowa is going to lose as a two seed, and if that happens, we may take a break from the show for a while. But give me your predictions for Saturday's game, and assuming we both have them moving on, we'll talk about Monday's game.
Well, I'd kind of like to see Iowa get it going more from three. I think that makes them really dangerous, and we haven't seen that as much lately, which is a little bit concerning. I think that's a lot to do with other defenses, but regardless, I'd like to see them get going in that respect. I think I'll go 85 Iowa, 77 Grand Canyon.
That's the number that if Iowa puts up 85 against this team, they will win. And Paul Coral mentioned that on our show, that if Grand Canyon's going to win, they got to win like 66-65. They're a very good defensive team. Now, some of the numbers he talked about possibly skewed because they played some lower tier competition, especially in non-conference during a COVID year where it was hard to get teams to end up on the schedule. But this is a very good defensive team and very efficient team. So if Iowa's going to win it, I think they need to score obviously more than 70, and Grand Canyon, they need to hold Iowa to under 70. I would say my prediction in this game, and I'll give you a key to the game as well, my key is limiting Garza in foul trouble, and I may go with that the rest of this tournament because I think the moment he gets in foul trouble, Iowa's chances take a sharp drop off a steep cliff. And so I'll go Iowa 82, Grand Canyon 68. I think Iowa wins relatively comfortably. But let's remember this is the tournament, folks. So writing off a Grand Canyon team before the game even starts is, I'm telling you, it's a bad idea. Bryce Drew knows how to win games in the tournament. And these guys, I'm sure, they're playing with house money right now. They have no pressure, nothing to lose. It's a team that's just won their conference tournament. They're coming in with all kinds of momentum. So a dangerous game, no question. What would be your biggest key for Iowa to get that victory?
Well, I definitely agree with Garza not getting in foul trouble. As far as a key for this game, you know, with these kinds of games, I typically don't worry too much about like a special thing they have to do. I think they just kind of have to play well. I think they need to, I'm not saying it's a tune-up game, but I think they need to, you know, get settled in. I'd like to see, like I said, I'd like to see them get the three going a little bit better. I'd like to see CJ Frederick get going. He's been really quiet lately, but I think if they can just play a solid game, keep guards out of foul trouble, not give up, you know, not start bleeding in any way on defense like we've seen, and you know, let it get out of hand, which I don't see happening. I think this will be a fairly comfortable win, and hopefully it's a win that they can, you know, use built to build to go forward and kind of get into gear here and get comfortable in the tournament. So overall, I'd agree mainly with your key is just to keep guards out of foul trouble.
They are playing in a smaller gym, which Grand Canyon's going to be used to, but I think will also help Iowa's three-point shooting. I don't think Lucas Oil Stadium was very good for anybody from the three-point line besides maybe Wisconsin, which I think was kind of a fluke in the Big Ten tournament. All right, assuming Iowa moves on, the highest seed they could play would be Oregon. Eugene Amarui is a Rutgers transfer who now averages 17 a game, along with 5 boards. Chris Duarte, probably Oregon's best player, also averaging 17 a game. And then Will Richardson, a guy who I was familiar with, played Oregon at Madison Square Garden a couple of years ago. Remember, Connor McCaffrey was on that team. Joe Wieskamp was on that team. Luka was on that team. Bohannon was on that team. So they're familiar with the Ducks to a degree, but Richardson, the only guy left over from that bunch. And then LJ Figueroa, am I pronouncing that right? Figueroa. He's another guy who averages 12. So they got several guys who average in double figures, and I actually missed a guy. Eric Williams Jr. is another guy who can provide some length at 6'6 and scores about 11 points a game along with 6 boards. VCU, different team, typically predicated more on the defensive end, but I'm not real familiar. I'll be honest, I'd have to do more research on the Commodores. Not real familiar with the post-Shaka Smart era at Virginia Commonwealth. Your thoughts on probably Oregon, but again, it's March Madness. Anything can happen. A matchup against Iowa, possibly for a spot in the Sweet 16.
Yeah, I mean, that'll be a huge game. I'd probably guess Oregon also, but, you know, it's a big school. They have a lot of history. No matter what, that's going to be a very fun game to watch. So that'll be more of a test, I think, probably of Iowa.
And keep in mind, VCU probably plays the most underrated conference in the country in the Atlantic 10. St. Bonaventure, very good. St. Louis was a team that barely missed out on the tournament. Very good basketball team. We know the history with Dayton. We know the history with Davidson. So Duquesne had some good moments late in the season, as did Richmond. So this is a tested couple of teams that are coming into to play Iowa potentially in that second round game. And Oregon is finally healthy. A lot of people picking them as a trendy upset pick over Iowa. But we're going to leave it right there. Let's not look too far past Grand Canyon, and we'll see what happens. This has been our preview show of the first round of March Madness, of the Iowa Grand Canyon game, which again will be on Saturday evening, 5:25 p.m. Central Time on TBS. Iowa right now favored by 14.5 for this game, which I think is probably a fair line, but I hate it when Iowa's got a big advantage, at least predicted to win by that much. But again, very few 15 seeds have beaten 2 seeds in the history of the tournament, so let's hope that stays that way. I will say this, this is tied for the highest seed in Iowa history. The 2 times Iowa got a 3 seed in the tournament, which you may remember one of those times in 2006, they did lose in the first round. So let's hope history doesn't repeat itself there. But again, Iowa, Grand Canyon University, 5:25 p.m. Central Time from Indianapolis, Indiana, and it will be at Indiana Farmers Coliseum, the home of IUPUI. So a small arena, there'll be some fans there, and the season of hype and the season of expectations has come down to this. Alex, thanks for joining us this evening, and hopefully we had a chance to talk about a victory over the Antelopes and potentially a win over the Oregon Ducks.
Yep, thanks for having me. Hopefully Iowa comes out of this clean, and we get to have another positive show afterwards.
All right, this is from the Hawkeye of the Storm and week 155 of Brandon's Branded Thoughts. We'll talk to you soon. Go Hawks.